Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, we examine the very complicated and fluid situation happening in Syria and Turkey. We dive into the 2020 race and we make some predictions of what's to come next. And oh boy, is Hillary Clinton running again? Before we get started, give us those 5-star reviews, subscribe, get a friend to do the same. Spread the word about the Charlie Kirk Show. This is Charlie Kirk, host of the Charlie Kirk Show, your home of conservative, libertarian, rational thinking. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
All right, everybody. Welcome to this edition of the Charlie Kirk Show. There's a lot of news going on right now. Hillary Clinton looks like she might throw her hat back into the ring. We will get back to that in just a second. But we want to break down this escalating Turkey situation. And so first and foremost, I've said many times on the Charlie Kirk Show that it's much harder to end a war than it is to start a war. And it is let's just submit this as piece of evidence number one under that statement that America has made some rather dramatic mistakes in the foreign policy arena over the last 30 years. And I've been very critical of the United States' invasion of Iraq. Invading Iraq was a waste of resources, a waste of human lives, a waste of American lives. It was an inappropriate response to the tragedy of 9/11. We spent over $1 trillion invading Iraq, money that could have been spent on our own country. We're $22 trillion in debt. And the invasion of Iraq actually contributed eventually to the destabilization of the entire region. Iraq used to be fighting Iran, which is one of our greatest enemies around the world and the number one funder of terrorism in the world. So with the destabilization of Iraq, then of course we had the rise of ISIS and all the problems that came after that. And the withdrawal from Iraq by President Barack Obama was probably not done in the best way, which then, of course, created a vacuum. ISIS rises up, and then we have to get re-engaged and re-involved into the region. And so before the announcement this last weekend where President Trump announced the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Syria, the troops in Syria were there for the main reason in northern Iraq and Syria to assist a coalition that was built with the Kurds. We'll get to who the Kurds are in a second, to fight ISIS. So ISIS has been totally and completely destroyed by President Trump and the help of the Kurds on the ground. And so if you go back into the history of who the Kurdish people are, they are the largest ethnic group in the world without their own country to call their own. They mostly occupy northeast Syria, northern Iraq, and the southeastern part of Turkey. And so the Kurds tend to be very pro-American. The Kurds tend to be more pro-Western than not. Now, it's not that black and white. There are plenty of people that fight under the Kurdish banner that are not pro-Western, that are not pro-American, but they have teamed up with American forces plenty of times in the past to help fight common enemies. And so President Trump, under his mandate given by the American people to end these endless wars that are bankrupting this country and not making us safer whatsoever, of course, signals over the weekend that he's going to withdraw troops out of Syria. Essentially, we had 1,000 strategic, mostly special forces troops that were helping the Kurds and were helping eliminate and abolish ISIS. So let's take a step back. First and foremost, generally the rule in the Middle East is the more the United States gets involved, the worse things get. That is the general rule. Now, there are exceptions to that rule. So we have been in Afghanistan for well over 17, 18 years. I have not heard from any sort of foreign policy expert, from any senator, from any person who is promoting the constant occupation of Afghanistan, because it's an occupation, not even a war, what exactly success looks like. There has to be a well-defined, objective, of success. In Afghanistan, that doesn't exist. If what success looks like in Afghanistan is just we want to prevent bad people from eventually rising up. So one of my favorite quotes that articulates this is from July 4th, 1821, when Secretary of State John Quincy Adams delivered a historic address on U.S. foreign policy. And he said, America should not go abroad in search of monsters to destroy. When you have 7 billion people on the planet, there's a lot of bad people in the world. Is it the role, as articulated in the United States Constitution, for America to go around and root out every bad totalitarian dictator and every person that does something incorrect around the world? I would argue, no, that is not the correct role of the U.S. foreign policy. Now, are there times when America, as a benevolent superpower, have correctly intervened when an existential evil force is on the march? Yes, I have talked positively about the United States getting involved in the Korean War. The Korean War was an example where the United States got involved and South Korea is now able to exist because of America intervening in the Chinese Communist Party invasion of Korea, which would have had the entire peninsula occupied under communist rule. The fact the United States of America got involved and pushed back the communist forces to what is now known the demilitarized zone, South Korea exists to this day. With that being said, to push back against the neoconservative worldview that there should be a creation of an American empire, I don't believe that. First of all, it's not fiscally sustainable. Second of all, it doesn't work. It's not morally correct. And more times than not, it actually ends up further destabilizing the regions we get involved in. The Vietnam War and the Iraq War are probably two of the most famous examples of the failures of the attempt to try to create an American empire, to try to create America's ubiquitous presence in places where there are people that do not like us. Well, there are plenty of people that do not like us, and some of them come into power. It is not wise. It is not prudent. In fact, it is foolish for a country that is $22 trillion in debt, that cannot even teach our own children to read effectively. In fact, a study came out today that shows that half of the students in California public schools cannot read English at grade level. That is half the students in California. And yet we have troops 5,000 miles away at a very expensive and a very dangerous position that are doing what exactly in Afghanistan? And that is why I have written quite boldly on this topic, saying that the United States should end the war in Afghanistan. Afghanistan is a fool's errand. The Soviet Union spent tens of billions of dollars in Afghanistan, and it ended up contributing to the fall of the Soviet Union. There is no geopolitical advantage to being parked into Afghanistan. So now transitioning to Syria. So President Trump has already said he wants to end the war in Afghanistan, and we were having conversations with the Taliban, who are horrible people, but we used to have meetings with the Taliban for many, many years prior to 9/11. There were many contributing actors to 9/11. We've talked about this on the Charlie Kirk Show. The Taliban were one of them. However, they were not the sole actors behind 9/11, and it's an incorrect response to have an 18-year occupation after something horrible happens on your in your country when most of the Taliban were not the primary actors behind 9/11. So now I want to get to Syria. I want to talk about exactly what's going on there. But first, a recent Gallup survey shows Americans worry more about burglary than almost any other crime, more than mugging, more than terrorism, more than car theft, and even murder. According to the studies, just over 10% of break-ins are planned beforehand. The rest are spur of the moment, crimes of opportunity, in other words, totally random. Did you know that most break-ins happen between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. in the middle of the day? According to the FBI, the average loss in a burglary is over $2,000. This can be hard to recover from. There are over 2 million burglaries reported every single year. That's one every 13 seconds. And what's crazy is that only 1 in 5 homes have home security, maybe because most companies really don't make it easy. I can tell you right now, most people do not get home security because it's so confusing, so expensive, and it takes too much time, and it's a total hassle. That's why SimpliSafe is my top choice. Hands down, SimpliSafe protects your whole home, every window, room, and door, with 24/7 monitoring just for over a fraction of the cost. Their police dispatch system is up to 3.5 times faster because they use video verification. They make it easy on you. There's no contract, hidden fees, or fine print. It's designed to blend right into your home. No wires, no drilling. It's easy to order, and it's easy to set up, usually under 1 hour. They've won a ton of awards, from CNET to New York Times Wire Cutter, and it's the stuff I use on the property I care about the most. And guess what? I even bought SimpliSafe for my parents and their home. So right now, visit simplisafe.com/Charlie. You get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. You've got nothing to lose. Go now and be sure to go to simplisafe.com/Charlie, C-H-A-R-L-I-E, so they know our show sent you. That's simplisafe.com/Charlie. So there's a ton of confusion around what's going on in Syria and Turkey. So President Trump signaled the withdrawal of U.S. Special Forces, over 1,000 U.S. Special Forces that were fighting along Kurdish soldiers in Syria. And there's a lot of confusion around it because some people say they've been withdrawn and some people say they have been withdrawn. Speaking of this whole topic, Mr. Producer has some kind of background and some information around what's going on in Turkey, who's launched the assault and the cross-border operation that Erdogan, who's a bad guy, by the way, Erdogan is not a good person, has launched on Syria.
Yeah, I mean, understanding the origins of this conflict, I think, are really important, and a lot of people don't really understand it. They just know that Kurds equal good, Turkish equals bad. Why are we siding with the Turks, right? But this is a long, long conflict that goes back decades and really much, much longer than that. But, you know, this much we know. The Turkish military has, in fact, launched a major cross-border operation in northeastern Syria against the Kurdish-led militia alliance that has been formally allied with the United States. The move came after U.S. troops who relied on the militia alliance to defeat the Islamic State, IS, ISIL, group on the ground in Syria withdrew from the border area. So why has Turkey launched this assault? I think this is a question that a lot of people aren't really asking. They just are sort of glazing over it. But it's important to understand why. Why? It's because Turkey considers the biggest militia in the Kurdish-led alliance a terrorist group. Again, this goes back decades. Really, the start kind of happened in the 70s, and then it became an armed conflict in the 80s, early 80s. So Turkey's president wants to drive back what he considers terrorists, because they, again, the Kurds, this is important to reiterate, the Kurds are the largest ethnic group in the world that don't have a sovereign country. And so they're sort of spread across these three different countries, and they want their own country, obviously. So these countries don't like the Kurds. The Kurds don't like the countries don't like the Kurds. It goes both ways. And they're considered domestic terror groups. Not dissimilar to situations we saw in Northern Ireland and other places around the world. Turkey's president wants a 32-kilometer or a 20-mile deep safe zone along the Syrian side of the border, clear of Kurdish fighters. He also hopes to resettle up to 2 million Syrian refugees currently living in Turkey there. Now, remember, when the Syrian civil war erupted, millions of people fled Syria. This was massive, massive national and international news for a couple of years, especially hitting its peak in 2015. Resettling 2 million Syrian refugees is a big, big undertaking. The Kurdish-led alliance says it will defend its territory, and it's accused the U.S. of leaving the area to turn into a war zone and risking the reemergence of IS, which is ISIS.
So this is tough because, look, my sympathies are directly where the president believes in this, where at what point is America going to be able to say, hey, this is your problem in the Middle East? These are tribal conflicts that go back hundreds, if not thousands of years. We are a bankrupt country that is trying to rebuild the middle class of America that has been so disenfranchised by the wise men of Washington, D.C. and the Washington cartel. Is it really our problem to get involved in border disputes between Syria and Turkey? Now, the counter argument against that is, well, we have stood by the Kurdish people and we've stood by our Kurdish allies. We have troops in that region, and now we are seeing the evil Erdogan, you know, put forth aggression there. I think there's some validity to that argument, but quite frankly, does it always have to be America that puts forth the troops, that puts forth the armament, that puts forth our own men and women in harm's way? And so, look, this is a wildly developing situation. At the very moment, there's reports that show that Erdogan, who's not a good guy, he's Muslim Brotherhood backed. I'm not saying that we should be relaxed in our posture towards evil. I am, however, saying that when we are at a place that our country is in such inner decay from within, the homelessness problem, the illiteracy problem, our financial and fiscal insolvency, is it really in our best interest to continue to play war games in the Middle East? And secondly, most of the problems in the Middle East, most that we get involved in only get worse. In fact, I can make the argument that our original invasion into Iraq, which started under the idea of fighting terrorism, actually has contributed to this very issue that we're seeing right now between Turkey, Syria, and Iraq. And so at what point are we going to be able to totally divest from the region? So Senator Rand Paul, of which I agree with on many, many things, said the following on Twitter, quote, "The Cheney-Graham neocon war caucus wants to come back to D.C. and declare a war. My question for them is, who will you declare it on? Will it be our NATO allies, the Turks? Will it be Assad? Will it be the Islamic rebels? Which ones? They want to keep starting endless wars and conflicts that go back hundreds of years, but what they want makes no sense." He finishes, "I know this. President Trump is the first president in my lifetime to understand what is in our national interest and what is not. He is stopping the endless wars and will be stronger as a result. The Cheney-Graham neocon war caucus has cost us too much fighting endless wars." So what Rand Paul's really saying here, though, is what side are we supposed to take here? Because there's bad people all over the map here. And Senator Rand Paul makes a very insightful point. And the argument to say that we should be sympathetic to the Kurds, I that resonates with me. They tend to be more pro-Western. They tend to be more pro-American.
And they have helped us fight ISIS.
And President Trump has not said one negative thing towards the Kurds. It's being represented that he's throwing the Kurds under the bus or he's leaving them out to dry. According to President Trump's own tweets and his own statements on this, he says he has drawn very firm lines against a Turkish inquisition of the Kurdish region. And just so you understand, the Kurds want to essentially start a new country, Kurdistan, which would incorporate parts of Syria, parts of Turkey, and parts of northern Iraq. And where we stand on the Charlie Kirk Show and where I process this is that America is war weary. Kurdistan is not America. Are they our friends? Absolutely, they are our friends. But we have to be so careful. We have to be so restrained in deploying more U.S. troops into regions. Because typically when we deploy 500 troops, that quickly becomes 5,000 and then 50,000 troops. This happens routinely, time and time again. Now, Senator Lindsey Graham has juxtaposed this. Now, look, Senator Lindsey Graham might be the most hawkish senator in the United States Senate.
And he's come a long way, we will say.
He has come a long way with his standing by President Trump.
He's one of his staunchest supporters normally, and I believe that still holds.
And so if you were to ask me, well, what's a way that you could hold Turkey accountable if they do intend actually go towards the slaughter of innocent Kurds and civilians, I think sanctions would be an appropriate action. And so this is one thing that Senator Graham has proposed, severe sanctions against Turkey for their invasion of Syria. So, but look, here's the other thing is when you do not, when America is the only country that ever acts as a hedge against other countries don't end up not caring. There are other actors in the region that could very well step up and tell Turkey to knock it off. I mean, you want to get on the side of Bashar al-Assad or the side of Erdogan? They're both really bad guys.
Well, and you got to remember, I think Senator Rand Paul makes a great point. It's like, do you want us to stand against our NATO allies? I mean, here you have all these people within Congress, within the Washington establishment, talking about NATO, NATO, NATO. Trump has turned his back on NATO, and really he was just getting them to pay their bills.
Well, and by the way, I don't even know if Turkey should have been let into NATO
in
the first place.
That's a whole other conversation for a whole other podcast. But they're in it, and they're our NATO allies. So actually, he's sort of giving some ground to our NATO ally, the Turks, saying if you stick to the parameters, things will go well. If you don't, things will go poorly.
Now, mind you to say, Erdogan is not a good guy. He's Muslim Brotherhood-backed. He has been playing both sides of the coin in the region for a very long time. My default position, though, is what is in the best interest of America? The best interest of America, I believe, calls for a de-emphasized and restrained involvement in the Middle East. Thanks to President Donald Trump, we are finally energy independent in the United States of America. We are exporting more oil than we are importing. Remember, when the Saudi Arabian oil sites were targeted by Iranian proxies, the price of oil barely went up. The price of oil barely went up because we are no longer dependent on Saudi Arabian oil. And speaking of, you know, Saudi Arabia in general, we've talked about how they have been involved in the funding terrorism worldwide and the funding of Wahhabism and the funding of madrasas. And 15 out of 19 of the hijackers on 9/11 were from Saudi Arabia. And so to tie all this together, why are we continually getting on one side or the other of these tribal conflicts in a region where we don't need the actual number one thing that that region offers the world? The number one thing that that region offers previously to the United States of America is oil. We no longer need that oil. We are energy self-sufficient. So I think that's actually a better way to describe energy independent, because I think that people don't understand what that means. We are energy self-sufficient. So I'm going to tell you exactly what I think is going to happen in this. But before we get into that, let's talk about the great president, President Donald Trump, our great president. President Trump is facing unprecedented obstruction and harassment from the liberal mob and their fake news allies. He's been exonerated twice, and they're still calling for his impeachment because they know Congress is their last hope to remove a duly elected president of the United States. He needs your support now more than ever. So there's a way you can do it. It's free of charge. You take out your phone, text Charlie, C-H-A-R-L-I-E, to 88022 and receive official Trump alerts directly to your phone. You'll gain exclusive 2020 updates directly from President Trump himself. Be the first to know when Trump merchandise is available, and you'll even be able to give your input on key issues to help shape the 2020 campaign. Again, all you have to do is text Charlie, C-H-A-R-L-I-E, to 88022. While Democrats and the fake news media have spent the last 2 years focused on bogus witch hunts, President Trump has been working around the clock to make America great again. Make sure you're getting your news directly from the source by texting C-H-A-R-L-I-E, Charlie, to 88022. That's 88022. Again, be sure to text Charlie to 88022 today. I get these alerts. You got to get these alerts too. Pick up your phone. If you support the President of the United States, do this now. Text Charlie to 88022 today. This is paid for by the Trump Make America Great Again Committee, a joint fundraising committee authorized by and composed of Donald J. Trump for President Inc. and the Republican National Committee that is dedicated to making America great again. So I was reading an article in the New York Times, and the way they were describing what happened with President Trump is it seemed as if President Trump gave the order to get out of Syria a long time ago, and it seemed like that order was not followed. It seemed as if generals said they know better for what needs to happen in the region, and they did not follow it. Now, based on the United States Constitution, the President of the United States is the commander-in-chief. The President of the United States has the authority to withdraw troops and to declare temporary deployments of our men and women in the military for 60 days. It's part of the War Powers Act that was ratified in 1960. So when it comes to this issue, there's a lot of nuance with it. My default position is that as our country is getting further and further into financial and fiscal jeopardy, while we have not been able to achieve success in the region over the last 18 years, while everybody in that region basically hates us, while that all is true, and we're not sure who's on what side, and it seems that there's an anti-Western sentiment growing all throughout the region, why are our citizens, our tanks, our planes, and our money being sent overseas for a fight that is not our fight? Now, is it wise to turn your back on an ally? No. However, it's not that simple. Bashar al-Assad, bad guy. Erdogan, bad guy. ISIS, bad guy. Okay.
Bad guys.
Bad guys, plural. Yeah,
many of them. Actually, and that's a good point, there's 12,000 ISIS fighters that are apparently imprisoned in the area, and currently the Kurdish fighters do monitor those prisons. But here's the other thing. 4,000 of those fighters are expats, meaning they come from mostly Europe, right? And President Trump, this administration, has tried to ask Europe to take their fighters back so that it would sort of release the pressure in that area. They have refused. So again, we're in a position where America is shouldering the international burden for everybody, and it's our responsibility to keep these people under lock and key.
Here's a couple questions to ask. Do you think America is going to be able to end tribal warfare in the Middle East?
100% not.
Another question. What does success look like for us in the Middle East? Well, hopefully, very minimal troop presence in the Middle East. I do not buy into this argument that we have to continually carpet bomb, occupy, and invade countries in the Middle East to prevent the next 9/11. I do not buy into that. In fact, if we look into actually who was behind 9/11, those two countries hate each other. Saudi Arabia and Iran were both involved in 9/11. Iran gave safe passage and had intelligence about 9/11. 15 out of 19 of the hijackers happened to be Saudi Arabian. And so those are two huge countries, one of which that we side with generally, Saudi Arabia, and the other of which we sanction correctly and we tariff, more than tariff, we sanction correctly, which is Iran. So I think a de-emphasized role in the Middle East is the proper posture. As America is energy self-sufficient, how about this? We can start to continue to play these war games if you can guarantee me this. The United States budget will be balanced. Our debt will start to be repaid.
That's a good point.
Americans don't have to come home in coffins anymore. We have a total handle on the PTSD issue.
Oh, and by the way, and we're dealing with our own homeless crisis.
So we have half of – I'm going to keep going back to this because I was just so stunned by this that came out today. Half of the kids in California public schools cannot read. Half of them. We have so many issues pressing at home, and there is tribal warfare going on in the Middle East. Now, if you are of the opinion that America will be able to solve the tribal conflicts and the tribal disagreements that go back thousands of years in the Middle East, then I guess you have found a foreign policy for you that is very neoconservative hawkish.
Well, and I think,
and Mr. Producer?
Well, I think you made a really interesting point before as well on a previous episode where you said, you know, some of the most effective military efforts that we had in the region was at the very, very beginning of the conflict in Afghanistan.
Correct.
Because what it was it was not an occupation.
It was precise.
It was not permanent. It was special force ops, largely, that went in, surgical strikes. They took out some of the big-time high-priority targets, and a lot of progress happened really, really quickly. So, you know, interestingly enough, the president even hinted at this in one of his first tweets when this story broke. He said, we can get back if we want to, meaning that mostly what he's pulling out are special forces that are known to be nimble, right? So we can get them in, get them out quickly. So if this does devolve into something exceptionally terrible, which we all hope it won't, it, you know, certainly has that potential, he can send those forces back. We can crack the whip with Erdogan, I mean, at least theoretically. So, I mean, I think what I'm getting at is we need to not rush to judgment. We need to not believe the mainstream media and the establishment Washington, the holy unholy alliance between the warmongers on the right and big government guys on the left. We need to say, hey, President Trump was elected to pull our troops out to end these endless wars.
And that's such an important point, is that President Trump did run on ending the endless wars. And if you think that in the Middle East, as in all things in life, it is as simple as good guys and bad guys, you're mistaken. There are people that would love to see America to continue to occupy places in the Middle East, because you know what they see when they see more tanks and they see more troops? They see dollar signs. As our country financially hemorrhages itself, they know that we become a weaker nation. There is a strategy that has been deployed by certain people in the Middle East that hate America, that want us permanently there, because they know it actually makes us a weaker country and not a stronger country. A strong country does not fight endless wars. We're going to keep an eye on the situation in Syria, Turkey. It's very, very fluid. It's happening in real time. However, my analysis always sides with the wisdom of the President of the United States, because guess what? He has been correct on these decisions in defiance to these experts that have continually and routinely put us into these endless conflicts with no success in sight, where thousands of Americans live their lives and we spend trillions of dollars on basically nothing. Well, I'm going to bet on the president, and if you want to bet on some of the sports games coming up, you know where to go. It's betonline.ag, our great partners here on the Charlie Kirk Show. So just to recap this last weekend, the Oregon Ducks won 17-7 against the California Bears, so that was a good start to the weekend. The Chicago Bears lost, unfortunately, a very winnable game to the Oakland Raiders, and we're going to see what happens at the recording of this podcast. There's lots of question marks right now of what's going on in MLB baseball. So we're not going to tell you exactly when we're recording this show, but what? We're not allowed to say that.
No. I mean, I'm going to the game tonight. We'll see what happens at the time of this recording.
We'll see what
the
happens.
Dodgers are still going to be going on to the next round.
We'll see. Maybe I said the Cubs are going to win the World Series, and yeah. I think I lost a lot of trust amongst the viewers and listeners here.
I am more right than you. I can tell you that.
Maybe
with baseball.
Well, so look, I'm going to talk to you about my five picks of the week. So we do a weekly pick'em, and we are going up against other shows where we are saying that we can pick teams better. This is all brought to you by betonline.ag. BetOnline.ag. Okay, so we got the Giants at the Patriots. The Patriots are going to win. I think the Patriots are undefeated right now. Got Panthers at the Buccaneers. I like the Panthers. Redskins at the... You don't like that pick?
Buccaneers all day long.
The Buccaneers have Jameis Winston.
He's been doing great lately.
He's a joke.
He's been doing great.
One of my least favorite players
in
the NFL.
Charlie and I, we diverge at Buccaneers.
Redskins at Dolphins. I like... Boy, they're both trash. I like the Redskins.
Okay.
The Dolphins are trash.
Yeah, I think I go Redskins on that.
Eagles at Vikings. I like the Vikings. Kirk Cousins has that. They have that team playing really well right now.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins is getting a little heat from Thiessen. Some
of
these other receivers are not happy. I'm going to go Eagles.
Vikings are going to win. Texans at the Chiefs. Oh my goodness, I can't stand Patrick Mahomes.
He's amazing.
He is a punk.
MVP.
What?
What's your problem with Patrick Mahomes? He's
Did you see him against the Colts? He is just such a...
Well, I didn't. So.
I don't like his attitude.
Well, I like the way he plays. I'm going to take the Chiefs there.
Texans. Saints at the Jaguars. Drew Brees is hurt. I like the Jags. Seattle. Seahawks at the Browns.
Teddy Bridgewater's been doing great for the Saints, though, by the way. I'm just saying.
Not a Teddy Bridgewater fan. Overrated. Should never have won the Heisman. So right now, if you want to get in on the action, go to betonline.ag. Don't forget that promo code podcast1 for your 50% sign-up bonus. Betonline.ag, your online sports book experts. My final pick is that I think the Packers are going to beat the Lions on Monday Night Football. Anyway, betonline.ag. Use that promo code podcast1. So now that we've covered the Syria-Turkey story, we did talk about how Hillary Clinton might be thinking about going into the Democrat nomination. And guess what? I can see why she might want to jump into this Democrat nomination, because there is some disruption. And now, Mr. Producer, I hate to say I told you so, but...
This is one of the original...
Okay, I'm just...
The Charlie Kirk Show predictions that has been proven right. It really has.
A lot better than my Cubs winning the World Series.
Much better than the Cubs. Elizabeth Warren, according to the Real Clear Politics average
Great
of
website.
All the polls, Elizabeth Warren is finally ahead of Joe Biden, 26.6%. Again, this is an average of all the major polls, right? So we're talking about Political, Morning Consult,
and Bernie Sanders
Economist,
has a noticeable
UGA,
bit.
Monmouth,
yeah.
Quinnipiac. Elizabeth Warren is 26.6, Biden 26.4. This is a major development.
And
But it's one we saw coming,
yeah,
to be fair.
And so, look, we have predicted this on the Charlie Kirk Show, and for a lot of different reasons. Elizabeth Warren has had the ability to really gather huge crowds, to be able to kind of talk about the mixture of socialism and populism. And we talk about, like, if socialism and populism had a baby, it would be Elizabeth Warren. And so, look, Joe Biden is wrapped up in this entire impeachment talk. It's impossible that the Democrats can continue to talk about impeachment without Republicans to be able to talk about Joe Biden. It's impossible.
Right. It's the classic boomerang that the Sean Hannitys of the world have talked about at length, right? It's going to come back on Biden. It is coming back on Biden. He's yelling at reporters when they ask him about it.
In fact, let's play tape of that. Let's play tape of Joe Biden get really angry. He was really angry at this, getting pretty upset.
How is your role as vice president in charge of policy in Ukraine and your son's job in Ukraine? How is that not a conflict of interest?
It's not a conflict of interest. There's been no indication of any conflict of interest from Ukraine or anywhere else. Period. I'm not going to respond to that. Let's focus on the problem. Focus on this man, what he's doing that no president has ever done. No president.
Now, mind you, Joe Biden also has said before that he never talked to his son about his business dealings. In fact, let's play the tape of him saying he never talked to his son about his business dealings. Play tape.
Have you ever spoken to your son about his overseas business dealings?
I've never spoken to my son about his overseas business dealings.
So after he said that at the Iowa State Fair and he got really upset, then Joe Biden has to defend his way out of a picture that comes out where it shows Joe Biden golfing with a Ukrainian gas executive and Hunter Biden. Now, I can just imagine the defense from Joe Biden. Again, all of these defenses with Democrats sometimes involve golf. Remember Loretta Lynch when she was talking with Bill Clinton? We were talking on the tarmac in my private plane about grandkids in golf. That's what we were talking about. Grandkids in golf. So I just can imagine Joe Biden's defense. Oh, we just happened to be golfing in the Hamptons and we saw some guy and we needed to complete our foursome. So we just picked a random Ukrainian gas executive to help play golf with us. So look, going back to the polls, Senator Sanders, we wish him well and we wish him a recovery. He is going to slip in the polls. In fact, Senator Sanders self-admitted that he understands if people are not going to support him due to health problems. Senator Sanders is going to trim his schedule a little bit. He's actually going to slow down his schedule because of the health complications that he has been dealing with. So Senator Elizabeth Warren seems to be surging. And oh my goodness, a gift from God if Hillary Clinton comes back into this race. And I actually think Hillary might be able to get the nomination.
No, wait, listen. No, so nothing is beyond the pale, but I will
talk,
tell you.
Let's talk about the news of it, though. Hillary Clinton said on Twitter, "Don't tempt me," in regards to President Trump saying that he would beat Hillary Clinton again.
Which has got to send chills down the party apparatus. Seriously, talk about a horror show. I mean, one of the most unpopular candidates in presidential election history, one of the few that can really honestly contend with the negatives that Trump constantly polls with, and yet obviously we know that Trump overcame those negatives and won the presidency. But the only person that could really compete is Hillary, and here she comes again to save the day, only she might be saving the day for the Republicans. Who knows?
Well, my favorite is this. So if you want to explain 2016 to a person, just go find her book where it has the main protagonist, action, climax, conclusion, drama, all within five words. Title, What Happened? Bottom of the book, Hillary Rodham Clinton. That explains the entire 2016 election.
Question, answer.
Question, answer, drama, intrigue, climax, all in one.
Well, what's interesting now, by the way, is that the big beneficiary is really Elizabeth Warren. You know, obviously, if Hillary gets in, I mean, it's a horse race for who is. I mean, they both sort of seemingly occupy a similar space in the collective imagination of Americans, although Warren is more progressive historically. But I think Hillary's getting there. I think the whole party is slowly moving to the left. Well, slowly, quickly, at warp speed, as a matter of fact. But, you know, and what's interesting about this current back and forth is that now Joe Biden's trying to stay relevant by calling for impeachment. He's finally called for impeachment. And it's
that's correct. That's
big
a big
news.
Story. So we also predicted this on the Charlie Kirk Show. From the day that Joe Biden ran for the president of the United States, we said that his best day will be his first day. We even said that Joe Biden is going to have to further radicalize himself. Remember, we said that. We said that Joe Biden's not going to be acceptable. And we even said that Joe Biden is eventually going to support impeachment. So now Joe Biden has come out and he has said that he supports impeachment.
And here's exactly what he said. To preserve our Constitution, our democracy, our basic integrity, he should be impeached. Biden told an audience at a town hall in New Hampshire on Wednesday. He's shooting holes in the Constitution and we cannot let him get away with it. You know, I love these high-flying phrases that come out of these politicians' mouth without any backstory, without any supporting
but any
evidence.
Sort of substantiation whatsoever.
Exactly. He's just shooting holes in the Constitution. Well, I mean, two could play at that game if you just want to wildly throw accusations back and forth, of course. Now, to Biden's credit, the poll numbers are seeming to indicate an increase in support among the American people for impeachment. And this is why
I don't believe the polls.
I don't believe the polls either. But this is why shows like the Charlie Kirk Show and others are so important, because it provides a counter narrative to the mainstream news media. I think so much misinformation is being bandied about in this whole impeachment fracasso.
Nonsense.
Much ballyhooed impeachment. But here's the thing. You know, I think the White House has responded today saying that they're not going to cooperate with House Democrats because Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, failed to actually hold a vote for to initiate an impeachment inquiry, which has been done every other time in history that there's been an impeachment inquiry. Obviously, the most recent vote that was had was with Nixon. Well, actually, it was with Clinton. But with Nixon, for example, it was so overwhelming that he resigned from office, the only president to do so.
Preemptively.
Right? Yeah, preemptively. So, but it also happened with Andrew Johnson, happened with Bill Clinton, and it has not happened in this instance, which would give House Minority Republicans opportunity
subpoena power.
Subpoena power.
Which they might actually subpoena Joe Biden, and they should.
Yeah, well, it's exactly. What they're trying to do is have their cake and eat it too, which is unfair. I think the White House is actually playing this very, very wisely in order to push back against basically some unfair practices by the House Democrats.
But let's break this apart. So why wouldn't the Democrats want to give the House Minority subpoena power? Well, because the House Minority, if it involves something to do with Ukraine, that involves Rudy Giuliani. It also involves Hunter and Joe Biden. They would go subpoena Joe Biden, and they would subpoena Hunter Biden, and they would not be able to hide away from those subpoenas. Now, they might be able to defy congressional subpoenas and say that they're superfluous, but eventually these House Republicans will be able to get their hands on some of the records while he was Vice President of the United States and while Hunter Biden got over $1 billion in investment from our greatest enemy, China. And we covered that extensively yesterday on the Charlie Kirk Show. You can go back and listen to our episode, The Communist Basketball Association. And by the way, I'm going to go to an NBA game in the next couple weeks with a sign that says Free Hong Kong and have them try to kick me out. I encourage all of you to do the same. That'll be a good news story, don't you think?
It'd be good. It'd be a good pushback. But, you know, I think what big picture, one of the things we sort of heard as a response, big picture, why do you think the House Dems are doing this? It's very clear. They don't want to give President Trump an opportunity to win another election. They want to cast a shadow so broad and so wide and so ugly and so daunting over President Trump that he cannot win over, say, suburban women, which a lot of people think is his weakest polling demographic come 2020. So what they're trying to do is they're casting a shadow.
That's exactly right.
Over him. They know that once this thing gets to the Senate, McConnell and Senate Republicans, they don't have the numbers. They don't have the votes. President Trump is going to survive this. Mark my words. It's not going anywhere. It might get out of the House, but it will not get through the Senate. There's just not the evidence isn't there. Everything's been released. There's just nothing there. A lot of DOJ officials are saying there's no quid pro quo. There was nothing. So there's nothing impeachable about this.
So to tie it all together, Warren is continuing to surge. Sanders, with his health complications, means more of that support will translate to Elizabeth Warren. You heard it here first. Somebody's going to get hot, and his name is Pete Buttigieg. There will be the return of Pete Buttigieg. We are going to do an I Told You So moment on the Charlie Kirk Show. Pete Buttigieg is going to really, really benefit from a lot of this.
Come January, a lot of things are going to be different in the Democrat primary party.
I'm telling you.
When the field
Iowa
winnows—
Iowa always works this way, the last 30 days.
When the
always.
Field winnows, support is going to go somewhere, and Warren is not going to capture all
of it. Well, and look, people like to be picky and choosy in primaries. And I've been through these. I was right in the middle of the 2016 primary. I'm very well aware. And Buttigieg has a super great Iowa operation. He's very well funded. He's good on television. Do I think he'll be the nominee? No, I do not. But I think Buttigieg could finish second or third in Iowa, even above Senator Sanders or even above Joe Biden, which would maybe make a Buttigieg-Warren duo or a Buttigieg-Warren duel. That would be interesting.
Little Aaron Burr
and
Alexander Hamilton.
That's exactly
rematch.
Right.
You know, I want to say one thing that we've failed to mention here is that Hillary Clinton went on PBS, just so you know, and said, you know, with this back and forth, don't tempt me, I might run again. And she says, maybe there does need to be a rematch. I mean, obviously, I can beat him again. This is how delusional Hillary Clinton lost to President Trump.
No, she thinks she won. She calls him an illegitimate president.
Yeah, she's been quoted like multiple times. As a matter of fact, let's play tape.
Yeah.
He knows he's an illegitimate president. He knows. He knows that there were a bunch of different reasons why the election turned out the way it did. And I take responsibility for those parts of it that I should. But, Jane, it was like applying for a job and getting 66 million letters of recommendation and losing to a corrupt human tornado. And so I know that he knows that this wasn't on the level. I don't know that we'll ever know everything that happened, but clearly we know a lot and are learning more every day, and history will probably sort it all out. So of course he's obsessed with me. And I believe that it's a guilty conscience in so much as he has a conscience.
And so that was some sound of Hillary Clinton saying that President Trump was an illegitimate president.
Over and over again.
But here's the one question I have. How can you impeach a president if he's not your president? That's the one question I have, which is
the left's biggest problem. But by the way, if you want to get rid of a president, folks, the way to do it is at the ballot box.
That's right. So, Mr. Producer, what do people do if they want to help support the Charlie Kirk Show?
You can help support our sponsors.
Well,
and
also,
you can leave a review, 5-star review. Ask a question in the comments section, by the way.
Because we have an AMA coming up.
We are going to be doing an AMA. We've gotten a lot of questions. When are we going to do our next AMA? We will do it soon, folks, so submit those questions in the comment section. And then tell a friend to do the same.
This is Charlie Kirk signing off from The Charlie Kirk Show. Give us that subscribe, 5-star rating. Leave a review. This is your home of conservative, libertarian, rational thinking. Till next time, Charlie Kirk signing off.
Hey, everybody, it's Laura Ingraham, and I'd like to invite you to check out my new show, The Laura Ingraham Podcast, exclusively on Podcast One. So join me 3 days a week as I cover politics, the culture, everything in between, laugh, learn, all at the same time. We got you locked and loaded, and you'll be ready for the week, ready for the month. And it's very easy. You just subscribe today, download new episodes exclusively at podcastone.com or wherever you find your favorite podcast. And you know mine's going to be one of your newest.